Right across America, at a state level, debate is raging about the question of school choice. Should mums and dads be given control of their child's share of tax dollars, or should the money be handed over to public officials to spend on their behalf? Now, in some states, we've seen real momentum for school choice, and in some states, momentum for school choice has been thwarted by judicial activism and court cases. Now, here in Mississippi, there's a really interesting case currently before the Supreme Court, which could have big implications on school choice. Joining me today is Buck Doherty, who is filing a case or has filed a case here at the Mississippi Supreme Court. Buck, thank you for joining me. Could you talk to us a little bit about this case and why is it so consequential for the issue of school choice in Mississippi?
Well, thank you for having me. We, on behalf of Liberty Justice Center, I'm senior counsel there. We're a very strong proponent of education freedom and school choice. Our client is Mid-South Association of Independent Schools. They have several private schools, some religious, some not religious, in the state of Mississippi. And we attempted to intervene in a lawsuit because the legislature wanted to appropriate $10 million in federal funds to MAIS and its private member schools. And we attempted to intervene in that case, and we recently argued that case before the Mississippi Supreme Court. So we're still awaiting a decision on that.
So you get a chunk of federal money, roughly $10 million, made available by the federal government, which the Mississippi state legislature then gave to private schools. And the argument by an activist group is that's wrong. That contravenes the Mississippi Constitution.
That's exactly right.
Why are they arguing that? On what basis?
Well, the Mississippi Constitution that you refer to is from 1890, and it basically there is a provision in there that says there can be no appropriation to either sectarian schools or to non-free schools. Obviously, MAIS is a private organization, and its member schools are private. And so that was the theory that the organization that represented the plaintiffs took. And they sued state officials to try to stop that appropriation from going to our client, MAIS, and private schools.
I think the section of the Constitution, if I remember correctly, section 208 of the Mississippi Constitution, is that correct?
That's exactly right.
And the argument is from the people behind this court case is that prohibits spending public money in private schools. Is that right?
That's correct. And the type of federal funds that were earmarked both for Mississippi and to MAIS, they were not for education related purposes. They were for infrastructure development. This arose out of the COVID global pandemic. And so it was for each school to try to apply. Each school could receive up to $100,000. It was going to be audited by the federal government. It was going to be audited by the state of Mississippi in terms of the MAIS's member schools applying. And so that was the argument that because of the Mississippi Constitution that MAIS could not receive these funds, nor could its private schools receive those funds.
Is there a precedent for public money like this being allocated to private schools previously?
There is. And actually, that was one of our legal defenses on behalf of MAIS, where we attempted to intervene and to say, you know, MAIS is a necessary party to this lawsuit. Number one, it should be allowed to intervene as a defendant. And the defense that we attempted to raise was that this provision of the Mississippi Constitution violated the United States Constitution. And that was the defense that we attempted to intervene and raise, and that we were not allowed to do that. The state officials made a little bit different legal defense argument, but the defense that we wanted to make was that the plaintiff could not rely on Mississippi's Constitution to stop the money from going to MAIS.
There's a distinction as well to be made, I think, between using public money and giving it to private schools and giving public money to mums and dads who can then spend that money at private schools. Is that relevant to the case as well?
Somewhat. And I've heard rumors that this case has been referred to as the vouchers school choice case. That's not what the case is about. But we do believe that this case has quite a bit of significance and could be very important in laying the groundwork for future legislation, for future education freedom, school choice type options like you're referring to, where money goes directly to the parents. We certainly would support that, or money follows the child, to the school, and it's not related to going to the actual school system or whatever choice the parents want to make with their child, because each child learns differently, and there's a better fit for different children, and so that's, we believe, more options and more school choice options for families benefits everyone.
So how the Supreme Court rules in this case could, in theory, have implications about whether or not you have some kind of education freedom accounts here in Mississippi. Although it's not fundamentally about that, it could have implications for that.
That's exactly right. This is first and foremost a very important case, we believe, under kind of the big umbrella of education freedom. We do believe that there are many different avenues to get to a public school choice based mentality, and certainly through legislation. But yes, that's right. It's not specifically about school choice or vouchers per se, but it's a very important case. And, we believe that the legislature will take its cue from the Mississippi Supreme Court, depending on how it rules. And perhaps there could be much more legislation in the state that would be beneficial to parents who want, more options for their children.
What's interesting is that politicians who aren't in favor of school choice, largely because they're not really conservative, despite running for office as conservatives, have cited this case almost as a convenient excuse. They've sort of said, well, there's this case before the Mississippi Supreme Court, and the implication could be that it precludes the possibility of us legislating in favor of parental freedom. What's quite interesting from what you're saying is that actually, however this case goes, it's not actually about whether or not public money is given to parents to spend in private schools. This is purely about whether public money can be given directly to private schools. So the objections, certainly this case can't be used as a reason not to go for ESAs.
Yeah, I would agree with that, regardless of the outcome. Obviously, we want a positive outcome for our client, because they could be the recipient of $10 million in federal COVID relief funds for their private schools. But you make a great point. The provision of the Constitution in Mississippi that the plaintiff is relying on only refers to that money cannot go directly to a non-free school or a sectarian school. And this was a similar defense argument that the state made. And certainly the state is an ally of our client, MAIS, just taking different legal theories. The state basically argued that the schools, the private schools themselves, would not be in direct control of the money because it was going through different state agency, and therefore it did not contravene the Section 208 of Mississippi's Constitution that the plaintiff was relying on. We took a slightly different approach and said, we think this constitutional provision violates the federal constitution, but either way, you're correct. I don't think it's going to be, it's not going to matter one way or the other about future legislation, about, as you say, money going directly to parents as opposed to directly to private schools. So in that way, yes, you're correct on that point.
I don't have the exact text of Section 208 of the Mississippi Constitution in front of me. I've yet to learn that section of the Constitution by heart. But I think I'm right in saying the phrasing is designed for the circumstances of the late 19th century. I think it's designed to avoid public money being used to further what you might call sectarian education. Tell me a little bit about the history. We hear this, we hear the phrase Blaine amendments used. What is the context of Section 208, and what are Blaine amendments? And could you elaborate a little bit for the uninitiated listener?
Sure, and that was our argument. It was a Blaine Amendment argument, and so kind of post Civil War, in the late 1800s, post Reconstruction, you had a situation where there was a lot of hostility toward Catholic and parochial schools, the Supreme Court of the United States has said when you see code words, like sectarian, that's code for anti-Catholic, and so many states, and it wasn't just a Southern problem. It was a state all across the United States in the North and the South where there was this hostility towards Catholics because the Catholic schools were actually the only ones at that time educating newly freed slaves who could not read and write. They were really the only schools that were educating legal immigrants who came over, a number of whom were Catholic and received their education through these parochial Catholic schools. And so there was an attempt to even have a Blaine Amendment in the federal Constitution, in the US Constitution, and that was nixed. That did not happen. Several states
Let me just
implemented these provisions.
why is the Blaine Amendment, why is it called the Blaine Amendment?
There was a senator named Blaine, and he was kind of given the dubious credit, if you will, of promoting these amendments to not have any state taxpayer money going to parochial schools or private schools. And they're also referred to as no aid provision. And typically you see language, even though the different states, there's some variance. You see language like sectarian. It can't go to a sectarian school. It can't go to a non-free school. That's similar language that you see in most states. Some of the states have amended that provision of their constitution in the 60s and the 70s, and kind of done away with that. Mississippi's kind of unique because its constitution of 1890 that implemented this Section 208, the Blaine Amendment, what we argue, is still the same constitution today in 2024. So there has been no amendment in the 1960s or 70s, et cetera, on this provision. And so we believe, and we attempted to show the history in Mississippi as well as nationally as to why this provision of Mississippi's Constitution violates the federal Constitution.
And how likely do you think you're going to succeed?
Well, I hope we succeed. I don't know. We anticipate a decision probably within the next 60 days. There are a lot of nuances procedurally. We attempted to argue the merits of the Blaine Amendment, but we kind of had to argue some procedural issues, like we should have been allowed to be a part of the lawsuit and intervene. So it could go different ways. Obviously the ultimate goal is for our client to receive the money that the people in the state of Mississippi through their representatives wanted Mays to have, and it's private schools, but we feel pretty confident after oral argument. But we'll just kind of see how that goes. But certainly, we're very supportive of school choice and education freedom, and we think that's good for everyone in society, and obviously the parents and the students.
Well, thank you. Thank you for what you do, and thank you for joining me to talk about it. I really appreciate it.